As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi everybody, it's the weekly edition of The Ruck. After this, only two more to go, and we're all sitting here with our tongues hanging out with exhaustion. After that, there'll be a big break, and then we'll be back with you for the pre-World Cup internationals, but just with two to go. Now, it's a shame you can't see us in the studio today, because we're all wearing eye patches in homage to Madonna at Eurovision. We've also got someone here who covered it, Adam Hathaway. Was in Tel Aviv on Saturday reporting for the North Macedonian weekly Argus, the 740th paper that he's worked for. Adam, you took a strong line. Is it a real genuine contest, in your opinion, from Tel Aviv, or was it a load of wailing idiots?
Well, the bloke who came last, the English fella, he reckons it was all about Brexit.
Yeah.
Didn't get any votes, but to be honest...
What was your lead for the North Macedonian?
Oh, Madonna.
Okay. Stuart... Bob Dylan, he's never entered Eurovision.
No.
Do you think it's time? Because, well, you know, he could bring the whole thing up. He could give it a grace. He can't sing either, so he'd fit in pretty well.
It's never had a Nobel Prize winner. It's never had an American entrant, and that doesn't matter because Australia are now in it. So, you know, we're not worried about it being within the borders of Europe. It is time that Bob, especially with his magnificent band, entered. Yes, indeed.
I think he should. And I'm not joking. Alex Lowe from The Times, Foals. First of all, who are they?
Foals, a band from Oxford. They're on their fifth album. They're just sensationally good. Yeah. Live act. They're about to go back on tour. I can't wait to see them. I don't think they'll grace Eurovision.
Yeah,
I think it's beneath them.
Okay,
beneath them.
But is the lead singer a woman with a beard?
No, he's a man with a beard.
Okay, oh, I can't see that going down. There we go. On the weekend, just before Eurovision, just before Adam jetted off to Tel Aviv. The last weekend of the regular season of the Gallagher Premiership took place. And at some stage, I think four different teams are going into Europe, depending on results. But, Alex, what sort of season has it been? Now it's all over. What struck me is the middle of the table was vast. It was like team number four at the start of play last week, Harlequins, were not really that much better or worse than, say, team number 10, Worcester. Is that good for the Premiership because you get loads of close games, or was it bad because it says that there's not quite the class there?
Yeah, we've had this conversation on this pod through the season about whether or not it's been a good season, a classic season. I think, as we've spoken about it before, I felt that there's been a lot of storylines, there's been a lot of interest and drama at the bottom, a lot of really competitive matches the whole way through. Anyone can beat anyone, which is the cliche, but actually it is what... generally what you want to see, except that the top two have been cut off from the rest. I think when you come down to look at the table as it is it 5 points between fourth and ninth?
Yeah.
Makes it very tight. I think it actually shows that there are two teams who are far and away better than the rest, who are all pretty middling. And if you can qualify for the playoff places with an 11-11 record, then I think it shows that the standard has been pretty middling for the large majority of the season. That doesn't mean you don't get great matches and drama and storylines and the narrative, which is what we want. I mean, we've seen the relegation battle down the bottom. You know, Leicester were in deep trouble only a few weeks ago. There's been a lot to talk about, a lot of interest, a lot to keep us captivated. I think, actually, a reflection on the quality of the league is that there are two teams at the top who are far and away the best. Gloucester are doing a pretty decent job of trying to bridge the gap, and then the rest are battling it out for one position, but they're all pretty inconsistent.
Stuart, you did a kind of philosophical piece about the role of the Premiership for Sunday's paper. I went to see Harlequins, who were very, very close to the top four indeed, but with the greatest respect to them, they really did not look like a playoff team to me. Now, is it not part of the function of the Premiership to produce really, really top quality teams, and more than two?
I think it's part of the function, but only in the sense that it is the race on debt of the clubs to be successful, to play a brand of rugby that will fill the grounds, that will make companies like CVC fascinated, that will bring in big television money. That's the business. I think that this year, I would disagree with Alex in the sense that I think there was one outstanding team. Exeter are very good at winning, but I think they're a lesser team than they were last year. I thought against Northampton, you know, we saw a team who have gone from being very good at illegally killing ball but not getting penalised to a team that just work for scrum penalties and play into the corner. I love the club. I don't like the way they play. Saracens, on the other hand, you don't get great games with them because they know when they can afford to lose, and when they play well, they're too good for anyone. And if you think about Glasgow, Munster, Leinster in the final, three great performances, maybe not great matches because no one can live with them. I expect that to carry on in the last two rounds. And the other thing I would just say to put the nail on the Premiership season, you know, Saracens were the exception. They were not the rule. They were the only English team who made the last eight of the Champions Cup. That tells the tale.
But Barnsley, you say that Exeter, all they were good at was winning games. Which is the one thing that most of the rest of the Premiership weren't very good at.
No, yeah, I know that, but the point is the other teams are not particularly good. They won't be beating Saracens like they didn't beat them in last year's final.
Yeah, that's the way they
play. And, you know, this league, unfortunately, I think it's about who wins the grand final. I wish it was about 22 games, but it's not.
Stuart and I have had this conversation before. I can see what you're saying, but I also think Exeter can switch something else on, then they'll have to do it this week. Adam, you were at Welford Road.
Yep.
First of all, was it like a morgue, or was there any signs of life there? And secondly, was there a resignation in the sort of Leicester shoulders that this season is gone forever and was an absolute nightmare?
Well, you've got to tip your hat to the Leicester fans. Still 20,000 of them turned up on Saturday. I don't know how they do it, because they've been served up a complete load of dross this year. There is a sort of air of resignation. And if you just talk to the fans when you're moping around bars and things like that, which I occasionally do, they're blaming everyone upstairs.
Okay. When you go in those bars, you're supposed to go up and buy something at the bar, by the way, but you think you've forgotten that. And Bath, as Saturday afternoon wore on, you thought, blimey, Bath are going to sneak in, yeah? And they damn well did. But without ever really impressing. What was there any signs of life?
They were terrible in the first half. And then they were 14 points down just shortly before the break. Somehow they got out of jail. I mean, I think Leicester's spirit had just gone anyway by then. I didn't really care. We got all the... we did it for Todd stuff afterwards, but she probably learned to do it for himself.
But that's been Bath all over, isn't it?
Yeah.
Terrible at one point.
For how long? Decade?
Do you know what? It is unbelievable, in my opinion, how many of the 12 teams in the Premiership have actually got the wrong men in charge.
But yeah.
There we are. We're just going to go through every team now so we can tell you where your team stood, or at least where we think they stood. Stuart, Newcastle Falcons, terrible open to the season. Then they woke up, but they left themselves too much to do, really.
Yeah, I thought the last third of the season they'd got themselves in a position to pull themselves away, and I was surprised they went down in the end. I think back now to Lang's missed kick Saturday for Harlequins, and they might well be thanking him, because last season Newcastle were the team who got fourth place without having a remote chance of winning the title. Expectations were so high the next season. they couldn't fulfil them. They've gone from an overachievers to underachievers. It's lucky that Harlequins didn't make the semis.
Adam, can Newcastle bounce back, bearing in mind they get a parachute payment and they've got experience at the top level? Do you expect them to come straight back?
Oh, yeah, something wrong if they don't. I mean, some of their players are staying, aren't they?
Not yeah, they them. Are. Alex, yes or no, can they come straight back?
Yes, they will.
OK, Leicester Tigers.
Well, what they need is someone to play as well as George Ford, because he's virtually carried them on his own. All season we've been saying they need a big, dirty, horrible second row, and they've signed one. Unbelievable. Lavanini, the Argentinian, fantastic player, and just what they need.
Stuart, nothing from the backs, really. Tamua, even outside George Ford, not been that great.
No, they've been terrible all round. George Ford should have been nominated for both awards. I concur with Adam. He has been fantastic in a dreadful team, and the fans are right. If you look at Leicester, all the problems the last 4 years have been mixing and matching in terms of management. Who's making that decision?
I think that they spent so long saying we've got to change the way we play, that they abandoned their heritage and they never got it back. Alex, Worcester Warriors, strong end to the season, quite a colourful team. Are there signs that they're going to glide up the table now?
Based on how they finished the season, yes, and I've said before, and this, I think we all had some doubts about Alan Solomons and the job he'd do there, but actually he's really got them playing beautifully, with spirit and heart and desire. The problem is they're losing so many key players. Josh Adams is going, Jack Singleton's going. They haven't signed anybody, and London Irish are coming up, and they will be armed to the teeth with big players, and actually. I would be concerned for Worcester for next season. I think London Irish could be every bit as good as Bristol were this year, and I would fear for Worcester next season unless they start signing some players.
Stuart, one of your old clubs, Bristol Bears, really intrigued to hear that Kevin Bagara party story you told us last week.
That was
absolutely excellent. No, it was really good, but it must have been difficult when that girl came up the stairs. But Barnsley, to be fair to Bristol, they it is difficult to bridge the gap, but your former boys bridged the gap in some style this year.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's interesting because before the season started, Pat Lamb said staying up is not our objective, making Europe is. So if you want to take the director of rugby at his word, Bristol actually have had a disappointing season. But I think for this time we can give Pat a bit of leeway and say let's not take him at his word. Not only did they stay up, they played some very good rugby, and they proved all this absolute nonsense about we have to get rid of relegation because you can't develop players, because if you're at the dogfight, you don't play any rugby, is the load of guff it has always been.
Well done, totally agree. Wasps, Adam, you could come on to Wasps, but I just think I was at Wasps on Saturday, and I found it quite emotional because there was a stage there when, with Joe Simpson carving through, that it just brought you back to last season with Cipriani, Gopeth, Daly, Christian Wade, and Simpson, and there were some times where they looked like the Wasps of old. You do fear for them because a lot of players are moving on, and they're now saying that they've signed all those they're going to sign, so maybe a big rebuilding project. But the crowd stuck with them, fair play. There's people were complaining there was only 17,000 there. Well, blimey, that used to be the aggregate crowd for Wasps at one
stage.
That
was a month.
It was. Adam, Wasps, what do they need?
Well, I tell you what they need is they need a fly half, because Sopawanga's been an absolute waste of space all season.
Yeah.
And they need a fit Jimmy Gopeth. Their season was done when Gopeth injured himself in pre-season, I think, especially with Danny Cipriani not there.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I'd also add Jack Willis being fit next season would really change them. He only played a couple of games and was massive in those games, and they've missed him as well as the players they released, which we know that whole story, but Jack Willis could be a big player for them.
Absolutely agree. And obviously there were five or six still out on the weekend. Alex, Sale Sharks, a great, great mystery. First of all, next year they could be the strongest team in Super Rugby, should they choose to be. But they're always sort of on the fringes, always on the point of breaking through. What's your view of them at the end of this season and with four or five bucks next year?
Well, they've signed six South Africans so far. And I think that's the move that they needed to take. If you look at the model that Gloucester have followed, it has been importing toughest teak Springbok players to set a platform. They've got some magnificent wide players. They do have some good forwards, but they're really adding both grunt up front, like physicality, and they've got some stardust out of the bag. I think this move in the transfer market is designed to take them from being on the fringes into the top four, and there's every chance. When you look at the top four from this season and last season with Newcastle, there's every chance that they could make that move next year.
Okay, that'll be good for the geographical spread of the game. Stuart Bath, another one of your old teams. Never convincing to me. God bless them, mind. I love
it. They had the one year when they were brilliant and lost to Saracens. Other than that, they're up and down and up and down. You know, it's just yo-yo stuff. And Blackadder's gone. There's been criticism. There's been praise there. But they're bringing in Stuart Hooper. The management above think he's wonderful. I think the fans are not so sure. Bath think they've got a man who's blue, black and white through and through, but blue, black and white through and through characters tend to be people who understand about winning. But Bath can't go there anymore because we're all nearly dead so long ago. There are big question marks still about Bath.
It's a big job for Hooper, isn't it?
It's a massive job. And if you look at the step up he's taking, and you think about Jordan Murphy and what's happened there, you know, there has to be a question mark. The management have nailed their colours, especially Tarquin McDonald. I think Bruce Craig wanted a big name. Tarquin said, no, this is the guy who will lead us out of the morass. I'm not so certain.
I don't get that. I don't, and God bless him, I don't get that. Harlequins, Adam, apart from their absolutely brilliant back row, where do you think they can go? They improved a lot in terms of positions. Are they on their way to glory?
I'm not sure they're on their way to glory, but they have improved a lot, although with the caveat that Alex was saying earlier that the middle teams are much of a muchness. They just probably need a bit more biff, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, Dom Brandt has been great this year. Obviously, Robshaw's great every week. they just need a bit more biff. Matt Simons has played well.
Would you describe a back row with Clifford, Dom Brandt and Robshaw as the fastest you've ever seen?
No, but they've signed Will Evans, haven't they? That young
got Will Evans, the kid from Leicester.
Oh, right, okay. So they've had to bring someone else in that great back row. Well,
yeah.
But Clifford and Dom Brandt can shift.
Clifford can shift.
Okay,
Dom Brandt can shift.
Okay, there's the third man there we haven't mentioned.
Leave him out of it.
Alex, Northampton Saints, they definitively improved, really.
Yeah, I think Chris Boyd has got a very strong case for being director of rugby of the season in the transformation he's delivered there. I mean, there's only margins that makes them any better off than Harlequins in the final reckoning. But he's just transformed the atmosphere there and the way they're playing. Cobus Reinach has been a sensation this year. I don't think they haven't signed a huge number of players for next year, but I just get a feeling that they've found themselves again. And there's some momentum building, and I think they'll be decent next year.
Okay, let's now move on because we've got four teams left. We've got the semi-finals. We can move on to the semi-final. It's still going team by team. Northampton away at Exeter. Now, eventually, they competed hard on the weekend, but eventually they lost by quite a lot. Have they got a chance? And do you think they've held anything back that they didn't show Exeter?
No, I don't. I think the answer is no to both questions. I don't think they've got a chance. They've got a sporting chance because they're in a match, but I don't see them winning it. I think they're a coming team. I think Chris Boyd's done a really good job there, but actually the answer that Stuart gave earlier about what makes Exeter such a difficult team to beat is
they'll grind them. The interesting one, Steve, on this one is Dylan Hartley finally going to be match fit to take his place? Because the area where that game was turned, in Brokerfield rugby, Northampton were better than Exeter for much of the game. Though they lost by 19 points, the game turned on the fact that Exeter at will could get penalties from the scrum. Is Hartley the man to come back and actually give a bit of biff and cement?
Is he in his first game back?
Coming off the bench with Hartley. It's an interesting one.
He might have to because Marshall went off early on
Saturday.
Yes,
he did. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Also,
okay.
He is the best scrummaging hooker in.
So we hear.
In England, according to those who who packed down with him, and he has been training. He's in full training, so Northampton say. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they've been sort of conditioning him to get involved on something.
Okay, Stuart, Gloucester. I think everyone's got a sort of soft spot for them somewhere. I certainly have. I think they're no way are they anywhere like anything like favourites. Do you have a fear that actually they're really going to get their comeuppance on against Saracens?
I wouldn't use the word comeuppance because I think they deserve to be where they are.
Agreed, yeah.
I think Saracens are likely to give them an absolute hammering. And that is nothing against Gloucester. It's my point. I think Saracens are the greatest English team we have seen in the professional era, the greatest English team we've seen in my lifetime. And what about Gloucester are decent, but decent to great is a quantum leap. I mean, I think, you know, by the end of the week, I wrote it in the paper today, I think the sideshow will have enveloped the centre stage story, and that's going to be Cipriani against Farrell. But the battleground is not going to be fought on a level playing field. People will say at the end of it, there you go, Farrell's proved his point over Cipriani, but it's nonsense, because if you swap them around, you'd get a very different scenario.
Adam, Stewart has written off Exeter. He savaged them as boring, useless.
Not useless.
No good. But
not useless.
Should they be okay at home against Northampton, or do you see any shock there? And just what do you see in Exeter that persuades you that they could still win the title this year?
I don't think they can.
Okay.
I think Saracens could beat anyone. Saracens would beat England. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they would.
But, I mean, one thing with Northampton going to Exeter is, don't forget that Northampton thought they had to win that game on Saturday, so they probably have showed their hand already.
Yeah, sure, exactly. That's very true.
I think when you look at the teams, as we've just gone through, you know, what do they need for next year? Where do they need to improve? If you look at, take Manchester City, the best team in English football, they're just going to sign one or two players for a couple of positions because they already have what they need. You go down through a lot of the other teams signing 6, 7, 8, 9 players. Exeter picked up a couple of very important signings. Stuart Hogg is big for them to replace Cordero. Will Whitty is a smart signing. Saracens bringing in two or three key players, Daly, Singleton, but they're just adding to a squad that's already everyone else is trying to revolutionise their squad, take big leaps like Sale. These two, they're just targeting the key players.
It's funny with Sarries, because, you know, there's so much jealousy out there for them, because they're not the sort of club, like, I remember Richard Cockerell once said, oh well, we do it the Leicester way, not the Sarries way. Well, look where that got them. And I think that people who want to be good, want to be great in the modern era, should, instead of being jealous, you should go there and learn about what they do, how they do it, their academy, their charitable nature, the bond that they have. Okay, they got millions of pounds, which helps. But I tell you what, they are the modern day club, and I agree with Stuart. They are the greatest club I've ever seen in Europe.
I'll just say Northampton very briefly. If they sign themselves a world class tight head prop, they would be up there with Exeter next year. Maybe not Saracens, but they are close to making a big breakthrough in the way they play.
OK, let's just go do these games in a chronological order. I just want, Alex, just a rough, say, a name of the winners and a margin. First of all, Sarries Gloucester.
Saracens to win by 16.
Saracens by 20 points plus, determined whether they want to win by that many.
Yep, Sarries by 20 on there.
Okay, I just see that possibly it could even be more than that, much as I love Gloucester. Okay, with this time we're going reverse order, as Eric D. Morley did in the years of Miss World. Adam, the other semi, Exeter. Exeter by 12. Stuart, your non-boys, Exeter?
I think Northampton's hit-and-run rugby could still give Exeter a bit of a scare, but Exeter do know how to win at home. They know how to manage referees' set-pieces. Exeter by 9-10.
Yeah, Exeter by a couple of scores, I'd say.
I'd go bigger. I think it might be 2, 3 or 4 scores, but there we go. So that's the two semi-finals. Let's be fair, whatever we said about the season, two cracking games coming up.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
This week, as well as the Gallagher Premiership semi-finals, we have the climax of the Guinness Pro 14, when Glasgow play Leinster at Celtic Park, and a decent choice of venue. I think rugby spends too long going around the old venues. Friday night at Glasgow at home to Ulster, everybody thought it'd be fairly close. My goodness, it wasn't. It was 50 points to Glasgow, 20 to Ulster, but the actual margin was way more than that. Stuart, Glasgow, what do we make of them? Because they've just crushed a good team or a reasonable team in the semi-final, but they themselves were crushed twice by Sarries. In fact, three times.
They gave them decent games in the pool stages, Steve. They were crushed in the quarterfinals. But I'm a major fan, as you know, of Dave Rennie, and Dave Rennie changes the way Glasgow play. Now, they have to be accurate in their kicking game, otherwise they're under pressure against a team like Saracens. But since that match, they've got that element right, and then they put pressure on, they break the field up, and it becomes kaleidoscopic, and you get this whole Waikato Chiefs way of playing. They've got a brilliant broken field structure, and nobody in, I think, Pro 14 can handle it. Very few teams in England would be able to handle it as well. I thought they'd beat Ulster well, and I think with home advantage against a Leinster team, who I thought did very well to bounce back from that battering at the hands of Sarries, I think they've got a great chance of winning. Rennie, I think, should have been the England coach. You know, I wrote that 2 years ago after the World Cup fiasco, or 3 years ago, and I think England's loss was definitely Glasgow's gain.
Adam, Leinster did bounce back. Is there some sort of sense that in the Pro 14 there are two teams way ahead, just like they are in the Premiership? Because Munster always try hard, but actually they're not very good. And Ulster were terrible on Friday night. Do you think those two are ahead as far as the two English teams?
Yeah, I think there's something in that. As Stuart said, Rennie's obviously a shrewd coach. I mean, we were up there, was it last season, when they tore Exeter to shreds and knocked him out of Europe? He's doing well. Leinster, obviously, under the guiding hand of your man, Stuart Lancaster, are streets ahead. Also interesting, they had Sexton on the bench at the weekend.
Amazing, because 2 years ago, when Leinster won, Stuart Lancaster took all the credit. They didn't seem to step forward to take the blame this year, but there we go. Alex, Pro 14, don't think, you know, I think that CVC have offered them half what they offered to the Premiership, yeah, which is, I think, about right. But a great chance at a huge evocative ground to have a great final.
Yeah, it's a great stadium for it, a great platform for showcase that final. I think you're right. I'm not sure there's quite enough invention among the rugby authorities. I go back to when Europe had decided to take the final to Milan, and then they revamped Europe and sent it to Twickenham, I think it was. They need to be, I get the need for to sell tickets, etc., etc. But I think it's a really, it should be an excellent event. I think Leo Cullen was slightly ill-advised to go down the sectarian route when he was trying to ramp up some of the support for his team by suggesting that Glasgow fans are Rangers fans, so all the Celtic fans will support Leinster.
Yeah, well, even if he was joking, it's just not worth getting involved.
So hopefully that doesn't have any knock-on effect into actually come into pass. But I think as a stadium, as a venue, and as a showcase final, it'll be a sensation, because we all know how good Leinster are, and if Glasgow are in it, then it's going to be a humdinger of a game.
I just think on Saturday or Friday evening, actually, Adam Hastings and Ali Price look to me like they've come of age as halfbacks, and the idea that you still have good old Greg Laidlaw there just to kick the goals, and for God's sake someone else kick the goals, because Ali Price was just electric. He looked like to me like a lion scrum half.
But he was the guy, Steve, at pool stage, he tore Saracens to pieces. You don't tear Saracens to pieces. The quarter final he was very good. Gregor Townsend's got a great rugby brain, but I just got scared and conservative, had to have experience and a goal kicker at nine. Coming to the World Cup, he has to just say, thanks, Greg, but I've got to go with this man.
Does anyone fancy Glasgow to hold off Leinster? Leinster must be tiring.
I expect Glasgow to win, yeah. I expect them to win.
Alex, your winner?
I don't expect them to win. I my instinct is still that Leinster will have enough to contain it and edge it, but I think it'll be tight.
For once, Leinster aren't playing a European game at home. European knockout game. It's unbelievable. Glasgow, actually at home in Glasgow.
That might give them
a bit of a leg up.
We all thought it's got to be the usual venue, didn't we? Yeah. The Aviva Stadium.
I'd already booked my flight to Dublin.
Yeah, I think as well.
Yeah. It's one of the Guinness Premiership finals not there as well.
Those European finals, there's a bit of a history that it's quite hard to back it up. Whether you've won or lost. And that Munster game was tough as well. In the first half, Leinster got no ball at all, and Munster, you know, if Glasgow get half the ball that Munster get in the first 40 minutes, it'll be done and dusted by half time. I think Leinster are a brilliant team. I've got massive respect for them, but I just think Glasgow get knocked out of Europe. They're fresh, they're ready, they've targeted this. I just think Rennie will have his team street smart up for it.
And just to flip it onto the Premiership quickly, the week that Saracens have had off to celebrate that win, but then just come back in with a new focus and for 2 weeks to go and win the Premiership. Well, you know, the scheduling has fallen for them because all those players didn't have to play.
Sure.
That's massive, because then they don't have any hangover from Europe.
It's the only reason they've lost in the last four Premiership titles is that they played against Exeter away the week after they won a final. That's the reason.
As a man who loves the old school, you must have warmed to Alex Good and his celebrations, because that's a man after our own hearts.
Absolutely fantastic. There should be more of it. He knew full well when he went out in Newcastle on Saturday night he wouldn't be playing the next week, and boy, did he make the most of it.
I'll tell you what, if he was playing, he wouldn't have done very well.
He'd probably play better anyway.
I don't know.
Also on Saturday, there was a playoff between the Ospreys and Scarlets to get into the draw for the Heineken Champions Cup next season. And after the match, if that was what you could call it, Ospreys went through and therefore are the only Welsh club in it. There's no sign really of a revival, and I just thought it was a wretchedly poor game. Even some of the great players who were in it didn't show. There was only just over 8,000 there, which makes you think, did the crowd really care about it? And I just thought it was incredibly low key. Good for the Ospreys to make it, but their performances in Europe have been very poor. So really, it is up to them not to qualify or to win it, but to prove that they deserve to be there and at least win their home games. But I have to say, Scarlets worry me intensely. I know they had both front rows out, Rob Evans and Samson Lee, but they really do worry me.
Steve, Scarlets worried you. As a man born and bred in Wales, are you slightly worried about PVAC taking over from Gatland after the World Cup, because it's been a pretty horrendous year for the Scarlets?
It's been a terrible year, and I don't really like the way that the Sean Edwards stuff was managed. I know Sean's difficult, but that didn't show Wayne in his most decisive light. He was chosen when the Welsh Rugby Union made no bones about it. There were two contenders. One was PVAC, the other was Dave Rennie.
Yeah, they were.
Which is why I think Dave Rennie came over on a two-year deal. I think that was all sorted. And, Wayne is experienced. I like the guy very much. He's very much the common touch, which is important. But is a combination of he and Byron Hayward, to follow Gatland's difficult and to follow Sean's difficult. But you must now be concerned that he hasn't got the Scarlets up to a fever pitch. Yeah. And I really do think that, Dean Ryan's now at the Dragons, which will definitely make them better, because it's the first time they made an appointment since about 1932. But we'll see. But Wales definitely need more from you. Definitely, definitely. Let's just move on very briefly. There's been some lurid publicity about the Rugby Football Union lately. In the paper and the Sunday Times on Sunday, Dean Ryan was explaining why he left the RFU, basically because he had no budget, nothing to do. He said, there's no improvement I can make because I've got no resources. Alex, over the years, you've covered the Rugby Football Union affairs absolutely splendidly. We now hear rumours that actually the financial performance is possibly even worse than we think. What is happening there? The committee won't budge. They won't cut their expenses. 64 people have lost their jobs. Is it as chaotic as it seems?
Yes, I fear it is. If you rewind to 2003, that period England won the World Cup, the spending of the RFU was more or less 50% on the elite game, 50% on the community game. The spending now is nearer 70-30 towards the elite end of the game, because the RFU has signed two huge deals, one with the Premiership Rugby for access to the players, and the other to award the players a 30% pay hike overnight a couple of years ago. That was based on poor financial forecasting, all of which they now admit. But the problem is that in order to keep funding that overspend at the elite level, they're cutting funding to every other department massively. England's World Cup budget is ring-fenced, but Dean Ryan's department is being shredded. The community game has had to save £10 million. The RFU is having to save £10 million this year alone. £5 million of it's come from the community game, only £2.5 million from the professional game, because there's very little they can do because everything is signed up in contracts. On top of that, the council voted to only cut their own expenditure by 6%. Everyone else has had to cut it by up to 20%. The people who signed all these deals and have overseen it for various reasons have all now pretty much left, but they've left the union in a state where they're in real trouble, because what's their raison d'etre? At the moment it's the community game and it's to produce players for England, and both of those areas have taken savage cuts in order to protect the elite level.
Adam, there's strong words there, but you're a man of the people yourself. I don't mean that in any jokey fashion, because you are. But where do you think it's going? Do you worry? And as Alex says, there's only the community game and the elite game, and both of them seem to be struggling.
Well, as one famous journalist said, I think it's going to hell in a handcart.
Who's that famous journalist?
Can't mention him in this building.
Okay. Is he from one of our rivals?
Yes.
So-called
rivals.
Okay, right.
What I can't work out is, if, as Alex says, they're trying to save £10 million, but they're billing off a load of community coaches. This doesn't make sense. If you've got to save £10 million, get rid of some fat cats. The council seems as if they don't have to give vouchers to anybody. That's reprehensible, what Alex has just told us. And the guy who organised this disastrous deal with Premiership Rugby is now working for him. He couldn't, you know, it's crazy.
Couldn't make it up. Stuart, we've seen a fair bit, but is it as grisly as you've seen it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the council are taking the role of the deep Conservative Party, and the RFU Management Board are the cabinet, and we've got this world of austerity. We've got Brexit come into the Oval ball game. It's absolutely insane. But there's always an issue, and that issue remains this whole thing about club and country. Why did the RFU want to give the players such a hike? Why did they feel this need? Because they know that if they don't do it, there's a danger that the clubs will pull in even further, and they will lose the capacity that Eddie Jones talks about so much of, having this team as their own. And that, when it all comes down to it, the whole financial, well, not the whole financial mess, but a large part of it is because the RFU are scared of the club saying, hey, you won't fund them, we'll take them completely. Where's your international game?
Okay, that's more strong words. And what strikes me is in the media, the RFU board, the main board, the professional game board, which is an amalgam of the two sides, the clubs and the union, and also the RFU council. Have you ever been invited to a media conference by any of them?
No.
I mean, we don't know what they do. We don't know who they are. They're not, seem to be non-accountable. At least the chief exec of the rugby union pops up now and again, but clearly with the reins on and under constraints. So, you know, when it comes to the fact that the professional game board, if they're important as they say they are, have never come up and put themselves in front of the media, it's just awful. And are they fit for purpose? No, at the moment they're not.
And the new Correct. Chief executive, who only started 2 weeks ago, Bill Sweeney, come from the BOA, who did a very strong job with the British Olympic Association in reforming their finances and making and their commercial strength, has come into the RFU in the middle of a crisis. What the fans care about is the England team and their local clubs. The leadership in the England team hasn't been settled. No one knows what's happening with the coach of the England team after the World Cup. He's got months to try and sort that, while also trying to sort the whole financial picture of the RFU, which they've tried to control the message on, but with every turn seems to be getting worse, not better.
The before we wind up now, and with just two more rucks to go after this one, I should say that whenever we get reaction from people who listen to the ruck, they really, almost 90% of them are talking about their own clubs and the community game. And it's really, that's where we all came from. I just loved it at the community game. I've been involved in that for donkey's years, so have all the other guys here. And, you know, that is what hurts people when their interests are banished and made sort of priority number 20. So, you know, the new chief executive, I'm afraid, he can't say, as others did, I'm going to spend a year going round the game talking to people. He's got to start right now and hit the ground running.
Well, if I was him, I'd have walked out the door already with a message. He's got a right hospital pass, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he has. It's the biggest hospital pass in the history of hospitals. Yeah. Finally, today, we always nominate our god or goddess of the week. We'll go, first of all, to Adam Hathaway for the Tel Aviv correspondent. I presume you got someone from Eurovision, Adam?
I was going to go with Madge, but people talked to my people and asked me not to do it.
Okay.
I'm going to give this guy God of... He's not really God of the Week because they lost on Saturday, but he's not going to be getting it next week. I'm going to go for Johan Ackermann, who has led Gloucester to... I know they're not near the top two, but they are slightly away from this sort of massive mediocrity in the mid-table. He's done a good job there, and they've got a bit about them this year.
Fine, that's the first God we've ever had who's failed a drugs test, but that, we've got to move on. Stuart, God or Goddess, you can't say Mrs. Barnes either.
I'm going to sort of follow Adam's thinking here. Lost by 21 points at the weekend, we'll probably lose again, but Chris Boyd has transformed Northampton. We got Jim Mallinder, interestingly enough, who is working with the RFU at Twickenham, who took Northampton from championships to one of the stodgiest Saints teams I've ever seen. This bloke from New Zealand has come in. He's got them playing wonderful rugby. Jamie Gibson looks like an international forward because of the shape they play. I love the way they play. I think Boyd's done a brilliant job. He's my God of the week.
Right, there's two decent gods. Over to the Times.
My pick is Denny Solomona.
Well, yeah, what a try.
Just for the way that he finished his season with just one of his trademark spectacular finishes in the corner. But he's battled through some personal difficulties this year. He's had some mental health troubles and has had issues off the field, which he has been dealing with, and which he's now becoming an advocate for greater attention on mental health issues in among males in particular. So having been through all that, to sign off his season with a try like he did, I thought was just a beautiful way for him to finish the year.
That's very good. Mm-hmm. I have to say, very difficult to beat that myself, but mine would be Joe Simpson, because Joe, people knew he was leaving Wasp, but unlike one or two of the others who were leaving, he continued to spill his guts at the end. Still played wonderfully well, not terribly diminished from his great years. Scored two lovely tries, spoke well afterwards, and I think that next year it'll be another one of those people that Wasp really miss and wish they hadn't transferred, like Cipriani and three or four others. I have to say, chaps, I'm looking for the nod now. I think Denny Solomona, A, for that glorious, glorious try which Sale scored, and B, for his hard work and his efforts and the dark places he's been.
Yeah,
Denny,
we're
good grief. We've all agreed for the first time ever. God of the week, Sale Sharks, Denny Solomona. Stuart, finally on Sale. What are their chances of going into Europe? It means it all depends on La Rochelle.
It's fascinating. La Rochelle have got to get in sixth place. At the weekend, they dropped behind Montpellier, who thrashed Stade Francais and are coming with a late rattle. But in the last round of the top 14, Montpellier go to Clermont, who, as we all know, are formidable at home. If Clermont rest their team, then Montpellier have a great chance. The problem is that Clermont, the week after, they will not be playing because it's the first round of the barrage, so they'll probably field a very strong team. La Rochelle, in contrast, play Bordeaux Begley at home, where they should get the win. So right now, Montpellier are the team who are in front, but La Rochelle look the likelier team to make sixth place, which is not good for Sale, is it?
No, no, that's exactly what it was.
So it is good for Sale, yes, coming sixth. Blimey. Yeah, so
he was going brilliantly then, wasn't yeah. he?
If La Rochelle finished sixth, Sale get the extra.
3 years ago, didn't know a thing about French rugby. So I started broadcasting it.
Do you know what? I thought, brilliant, Bungie doing brilliantly. I didn't know any of this.
I went through all that extremely well, and it was just the killer line at
the
end.
It's Devon Locke.
Devon Locke moment.
He dies before the finishing line.
No, he wins.
Oh, all right.
Devon Locke wins.
And just to clear that up, it needs a bit of clearing. I just got a shovel here. Sale will go into the main draw for European Champions Cup next year.
If La Rochelle comes sixth.
And what you said in the first bit there, where you're going well, was that they should do. So good luck to Denis Solomona in on and off the field. And it looks like you could be gearing up for the Champions Cup next year. Thanks a million to everyone for listening to us. We'll be back next week with a full preview of the Gallagher Premiership Final. Thanks to Adam, Stuart and Alex.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.